I remember the day like it was yesterday. I was a sophomore in high school. I was playing on the JV football team. I was a first string defensive tackle and a second string offensive center. Center was not my first pick. I really was playing tackle on offense, but we lost somebody and they needed somebody at center, so I was playing the center position. And one day in practice, and our football field was right next to the varsity practice football field, and one day word came down that the varsity team needed a center to scrimmage with them. And so, for whatever reason, I got sent up to practice with the varsity, which was pretty cool. When you're a sophomore, you're JV, you're running up to the varsity field to practice with them, and it's pretty cool. Get up there, find out I'm going to practice with the number one starting lineup for the varsity. I'm going to be in with all the first string guys. And in our high school, we had a very basic cadence when it came time to hike the ball. It was set, hike. That was it. Back then, we didn't do a bunch of variations or anything. And so I got ready, got up into the huddle, and my heart is beating, as you can imagine, and they call a quarterback sneak. Now, it makes perfect sense because you're like, okay, who in the world is going to do a play that uses the JV guy who's just run up and whose heart is beating twice as fast as normal? And so we get up to the line and we get set, and the quarterback says, set, and everybody takes off, and I'm just sitting there with my hands on the ball looking around going, huh? Apparently on the varsity squad, when they call a quarterback sneak, it is understood that you go on set to get that little extra surprise. The only one surprised by it was me, because they assumed that I knew that. They failed to communicate that to me, and it is absolutely essential in every venture of life that expectations be clearly communicated. Live long enough and you'll know the kinds of things that can happen when expectations are not clearly defined. It leads to all kinds of problems. And we need to understand what it is that God expects of us. Does God have expectations? If so, what are those expectations? Well, I want you to know that God has great expectations for us. Amazing expectations. Much like parents of a newborn child are filled with expectations of what the future may hold. Expectations like when newlyweds are heading off on their new adventure together. Maybe the expectations of business partners who are beginning a new venture together. Or perhaps, if I've not connected with you yet, you're just sitting there and your heart is just kind of... Perhaps expectations like what Colts fans have when your number one pick is Andrew Luck. Right? Are you with me now? Okay, I knew I'd have to relate it to you somehow. It is football season. Everybody enjoys football season. I even enjoy football on Saturdays, which Susan refers to as peewee football, because it's the college players and not the real players. So whenever a rookie makes a good play on Sunday, I pause it and point out that not too many months ago, that was a peewee guy. But anybody watch games yesterday? There were some good. Did anybody watch the Cal-Texas game? Oh, my goodness. Now, Cal, just this is a side note. This has nothing to do with the sermon. But Cal is where Aaron Rodgers went to school. Packers, one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. And there is a guy who is a senior at Cal who is about to break Aaron Rodgers' records. Phenomenal quarterback. The team is not great, but he's phenomenal. They're playing Texas, who is ranked, and it went back and forth, and one time Cal was 3 scores ahead of Texas. They had 45 points and were 3 scores ahead. Well, Texas fought their way back. They have a young freshman quarterback who's very dynamic, and with like a minute 20 seconds left, they score a touchdown to make it 45-44. And then the place kicker muffs the extra point. Oh, can you imagine how horrible that would feel? I mean, everybody in that stadium nobody thinks, oh, I hope he makes the extra point. I mean, it's a given. and he missed it. And the commentator said, even if you're a Cal fan, you're heart sick for that, because you hate that the guy, after everything the team did to get back, that he muffed the final extra point and they lost 44-45. We all have expectations. Expectations are part of life. What are the expectations that God has for us that are great? Well, last week, we explored together that God has given us one specific mission. Matthew 28:18-20, to make disciples. Not to grow churches, not to plant churches, not to build Sunday schools, not to build youth groups, not to build hospitals, not to build orphanages, not to do food banks. Now, those are all good things. They all have their place. But those are all secondary things to the mission of making disciples. That's the one thing God has given us to do, and it is the thing that churches collaterally, collectively, have failed at. We are not doing that well. We evangelize people to coming and sitting for an hour on Sunday. We don't evangelize people to a relationship with Jesus Christ. So, in the process of making disciples, what has to happen first? We have to be a disciple. You can't make something that you're not. We have to be a disciple, and God has specific expectations for us as a disciple. And a disciple is someone who does life with God in order to learn and grow and become like Jesus. In Romans chapter 8, verse 29, and this is from the Message, Paul writes this: God knew what he was doing from the very beginning. He decided from the outset to shape the lives of those who love him along the same lines as the life of his son. The son stands first in the line of humanity he restored. We see the original and intended shape of our lives there in him. Okay? What we see in Jesus, how he lived, how he loved, how he interacted with people, that's what God expects of you and I. Nothing less. Simple, right? No. But clear. That's what God expects of us. Jesus completely embodied what was possible in terms of loving God, loving others, and furthering God's kingdom work here on earth. Okay? You say, well, he's the Son of God. Yes, he was. But the reason that he lived for 3 years among us doing ministry was to show us what's possible. If it was not for the need to show us an example, if all he was going to do was die on a cross to secure our salvation, he could have walked out of the wilderness like John the Baptist as a fully grown adult, died on a cross, gone back to heaven, and it was over. The reason Jesus lived for 3 years among us was to show us, hey, this is what the Father has in store. This is what he has in mind for every one of you. What do we do with children when we're teaching them something? We show them how to do it, how it can be done. And that's what Jesus was doing. We see in Jesus everything that is possible in you and I. Now, Jesus used a variety of images to teach and describe what a mature disciple looks like. And one of those is found in John chapter 15. John chapter 15. If you turn there and we're holding that in readiness, look at it with me. And Jesus uses a very familiar imagery here. John 15, verse 1. I am the true vine, and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes so that it will be even more fruitful. You are already clean because of the word I have spoken to you. Remain in me, and I will remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. If a man remains in me and I in him, he will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If anyone does not remain in me, he is like a branch that is thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up, thrown into the fire, and burned. If you remain in me, and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish, and it will be given you. This is to my Father's glory, that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. So what does it mean to be a mature disciple. It means that we are going to bear fruit in our lives. Remember at the beginning of the service, I said, what are the ways that you most enjoy fruit? Fruit is a blessing to others, right? In a variety of forms. Some healthy, some not necessarily so healthy, okay? But fruit is intended to be a blessing, and God intends for us to mature and be bearing fruit in the kingdom. Now, fruit could be a couple different things. Well, it could be the fruit of the Spirit that Paul lists, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Do you suppose, could you use any more of that in your life? I could. Suppose the world could use a little more of those things? Yeah, from what I observe on a daily basis, yeah. Or fruit could be simply the product of what happens when we're participating. You know, the fruit of my work is that this gets accomplished, that gets accomplished in furthering God's kingdom. But growing into a mature disciple takes time. It doesn't happen overnight. It's not instantaneous, is it? And part of where the church has failed, along with neglecting the fact that we are called to make disciples, is that we have not explained or laid out or helped people understand how that happens. Okay? It's one thing for me to tell my kids to go do a task. It's another for me to explain the necessary steps for them to be able to do that task or how to grow into something. You know, it would be very cruel to tell, you know, my 6 or 7 year old, go ride a bike without training wheels. That would be kind of cruel, wouldn't it? Instead, I would say, go get your mother, and your mother will show you how to work at. That's true. You think I'm joking, but Susan worked with them more than I did. She's the one that worked and got them, and probably because I couldn't keep up with running alongside of them at the time. But we need to help people understand, here's the process that takes place. There are certain stages of development. As parents, that's a part of the process. When you take them, your young children, into a well check, the doctor has a list of things. Are they, you know, do they know their alphabet? Do they know this? Can they do this? There's a certain skills and abilities and knowledge that go with a certain level of development if they're progressing in a normal fashion. Okay? So how is it that we go through growing as a disciple? You have in your bulletin, I've given you something that you can use to fill out. When we look at the lives of the disciples, as they spent 3 years with Jesus, there are basically 4 stages of growth. And I've given you a spot to fill in your bulletin to explain what these are, and I'm just introducing them to you today. The first one is come and see. Come and see. You'll notice the way I emphasize see. Do you see how I say it differently? I take a little longer to say it. I repeat it. That means there's a blank there. That's what you should fill in. Come and see. All right? And there's a brief description there of what this is. This is the stage of exploring Christ. And it's basically represented by the statement, I believe in God, but I am not sure about Christ. My faith is not a significant part of my life. I'm trying to figure out where I'm going to place my trust, what it is that I believe in. And the disciples had to go through that. When Jesus said, come and see, they went and witnessed him interacting with people before they made the decision to follow him. Okay? But then the second stage is come and follow. Come and follow. This is growing in Christ. And it's represented by the statement, I believe in Jesus and I am working on what it means to get to know him. And then that develops into the third stage, which is come and be with me. Come and be with me. And these are all statements as if Jesus were saying them. Come and see what I'm doing. Come and follow me. Come and be with me. And this is being close to Christ. This is, I feel really close to Christ and depend on him daily for guidance. And then the fourth stage of being a disciple and the mature stage is remain in me. Remember the passage we just read from John 15? If you remain in me, and that is Christ-centered. It means my relationship with Jesus is the most important relationship in my life. It guides everything I do. Now, using Jesus' imagery of a vine, let me restate these four stages in different terms. Come and see is where I have seeds that need to be planted, seeds of trust, seeds of hope. Where am I going to plant them? Am I going to trust Jesus and plant my seeds of hope and trust in Jesus? Or am I going to put it in some other faith system? Or am I going to hold on to it and just do life on my own? We are all in that stage, one way or another. Okay? Once I decide where that healthy, good ground is, then I'm going to plant those seeds, and that's the come and follow. That's when the seeds have been planted, and they begin to grow. Now, what has to happen to a seed in order for new life to come out of it? Die. It has to die. And that's, in essence, what's happening to us. We are dying to doing life on our own, to sitting on the throne of our own heart and allowing Jesus to come and sit on the throne of our heart. And in the come and follow stage, the seed is dying, the roots are starting to go down, the plant pokes through the ground. There is no more beautiful sight to me than springtime when there's an inch of growth and all these rows, and you go by the field and you just see these rows of plants starting to grow. And it's new life, and it's beautiful. And then the come and be with me is when the plant has really grown and you can really see some productivity and it's really gotten tall according to what plant it is. And then remain in me is when the fruit actually comes out. It shows up on the vine or the plant. And you see the maturity turn into a blessing that others can enjoy. It's important to know where you are on this continuum of growth in order to know what your next step should be. We don't expect six-year-olds to use a debit card and balance their checkbooks. Right? That would be a bad expectation. So we have to understand where we are in the process of these stages of growth in order to know what the next step for us is. And we may be at different steps in the process. If we expect too much, then people get frustrated, right? You've been in situations like that where what was expected of you was what you felt like too much, and you get frustrated. I remember I was working on roofing the new addition to our house, and Eli and Sam were right early high school, late junior high, and I was going to have them carry the shingles up the ladder to the roof of the garage, and then I was going to take them from them, and they'd not done it before, and I knew they were capable, but they didn't think they were capable. And at one point, in all the huffing and puffing and grumbling, and Sam makes a comment, it's like, Dad, you just don't understand. And I'm thinking, okay, I worked for years and years as a carpenter. I remember the first time I tried to carry shingles up a ladder. I really do understand, but I kept my mouth shut. And I fought the urge, you know, I was running out of daylight. They weren't moving as fast as I could have been moving. I fought the urge to just go down and get them and bring them up the ladder myself. I let them wrestle through it. They got to the ladder. I took it off, and they got done with all the huffing and puffing and sweating and they went. And later on that evening, as I walked through the house, I said, hey, guys, good job with bringing the shingles up. I knew they were capable, but they weren't sure. That was an appropriate expectation. But I didn't expect Brendan or Josh, who at the time were very young, to do that. That would have been foolish. But by the same token, if we expect too little of people, what happens? They never grow up. They never reach their full potential. It has to be appropriate. There has to be that balance of what is expected of us. Now, Look again at John chapter 15 with me. I want to point out a couple things that you may not have noticed the first time we went through it. Verses 1 and 2. I am the true vine, and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes so that it will be even more fruitful. Then verse 5. I am the vine, you are the branches. If a man remains in me and I in him, he will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If anyone does not remain in me, he is like a branch that is thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up and thrown into the fire and burned. Becoming a mature disciple who bears fruit is not optional. Do you hear me? Becoming a mature disciple who bears fruit is not optional. There is a part of this growth process that is optional. Back here at phase one, when you're holding your seeds and you're not sure where you're going to place your trust, that's your option. We all have the freedom to choose who or what we're going to put our trust in. Okay? We all are free to choose that. But understand, once you make the choice to place your trust in Jesus, then the expectation is that you are going to continue to grow and mature to the point that you are a fully mature, fruit-bearing disciple. That part has already been decided for you. Is there a farmer in this world who plants a seed hoping that it will at least just pop through the ground? Do you know a farmer who walks around going, "Yes! I got an inch of plant that's come through the ground. Well, I'm good. I'm going to go sleep good tonight." No, it's ridiculous. When we plant things, we fully expect that they are going to grow to maturity and bear fruit. Why would God have any less expectation of you and I? He doesn't. He wouldn't. The problem is that churches are full of people who have been evangelized to something less than being a mature disciple. We have churches full of people who have repeated a certain doctrinal statement, prayed a certain prayer, been baptized, and understand that their passage into heaven is secure, that they've gotten their get-out-of-hell-free card, that's all that is required, that's all that's necessary. And it changes a little bit depending on the church group you're with, but if you repeat this phrase and you pray this certain kind of prayer and you have this experience with water, then you're good to go. The only problem with that is that we don't find it anywhere in the gospel. It's not in the Bible. Now, there are those elements involved. Truth does matter. There are certain truths that we need to believe. And prayer is a part of the journey. And being immersed is a part of the journey. But it's all an entrance into a relationship. That's what happens when you enter into that phase two of come and follow. And when that happens, then you're entering into a relationship where you're expected that you're going to continue to grow and bear fruit. The problem is that churches are full of too many vampire Christians. Have you ever heard of that phrase? Dallas Willard coined the phrase vampire Christians. Those are Christians who want the blood of Christ in order to have forgiveness so that I can have my ticket to get into heaven, but they don't want any part of the growing as a disciple part. Now, I don't want Jesus to come and mess with my life. I don't want to have to surrender, you know, how I do my finances to how it would honor God. My finances are mine. I just want the blood of Christ so that I can get into heaven. I don't want him to tell me how I need to treat my wife or my children, or I don't want him telling me how I need to function as a respectful employee for my boss, even when my boss doesn't always deserve it. I don't want him telling me how to make use of my time. I just want the blood so I can get into heaven. That's the definition of a vampire. And churches are full of vampire Christians. And there are lots of people sitting in pew right now, all over the world, or in a few hours from now in other parts of the world, who are content with just sitting there. But do you understand when Jesus said, a branch that's in me that doesn't bear fruit is going to be tossed aside and burned? There is no such thing as an immature disciple in the kingdom of God. Maturing as a disciple is absolutely expected. Now, perhaps you think that I'm being a little bit radical. Maybe I'm misunderstanding. Maybe I'm going a little far. Maybe I am not understanding Jesus' expectations. I mean, there are times when we misunderstand expectations, right? I mean, there are times when you know, I could communicate something to one of my kids that I thought was what Susan wanted and find out that wasn't it, or vice versa. That happens. So I want you to hear Jesus himself describe what it means to follow him. This comes from Luke chapter 14. A large crowd was following Jesus. He turned around and said to them, "If you want to be my disciple, you must hate everyone else by comparison. Your father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, even your own life. Otherwise, you cannot be my disciple. And if you do not carry your own cross and follow me, you cannot be my disciple. But don't begin until you count the cost. For who would begin construction of a building without first calculating the cost to see if there is enough money to finish it? Otherwise, you might complete only the foundation before running out of money, and then everyone would laugh at you. They would say, 'There's the person who started that building and couldn't afford to finish it.' Or what king would go to war against another king without first sitting down with his counselors to discuss whether his army of 10,000 could defeat the 20,000 soldiers marching against him? And if he can't, he will send a delegation to discuss terms of peace while the enemy is still far away. So you cannot become my disciple without giving up everything you own." And when Jesus says, hate in comparison, mother, father, brother, sister, wife, even your own children, he's not saying literally hate. He's saying hate compared to the love you have for God. It's as if you hate all these other people and even your own life compared to how you love God. Jesus is saying, when you are at this point where you're holding on to your seeds and you're trying to decide where I'm going to plant these seeds of hope, count the cost. Understand what's involved. And we have not done that as a church. We have made it too easy for people to repeat a phrase, say a prayer, get wet, and then go on as if everything is fine. And we have failed to communicate that that's the start of the journey. That's not the completion of the journey. That's just how you get started. Can you imagine walking into, you have won tickets for a Colts game, and you show up early, and you're there a couple hours early, and you sit down, and you're just sitting there waiting for all the excitement to happen. And 10 minutes later, a guy comes in, sits down a couple pews or a couple chairs away, starts eating popcorn, and you look over, and it's Andrew Luck. And you're like, "Dude, what are you doing?" He's like, "Hey, I'm just here to enjoy the game." No. That's not the expectation at all. You weren't recruited just to be a spectator. You were recruited to be out on the field as part of winning games. Guess what? You were not recruited to be in God's kingdom as a spectator. You were recruited to be part of his ongoing furthering of his kingdom. And so you need to understand where you are in this process. And if you have made that, if you're one of those people that's like, hey, I said the words I was supposed to, I prayed the prayer I was supposed to, I got wet, and I'm just kind of sitting here enjoying, spectating everything going on, understand that you have been misinformed. It doesn't work that way. And if somebody failed to tell you that you need to count the cost of what it means to follow Jesus, then I'm officially apologizing for that. Back up, be in square one, and figure out where you want to plant your seeds of hope. Do you really want to follow Jesus? Because it is a lifelong, everything into it commitment that God fully expects we will engage in all along the way until we become fully mature, fruit-bearing disciples. Okay? We're going to take some time in the weeks ahead to explore a little bit more those stages of development. But understand this one thing today. You're either walking around holding your seeds, deciding where you want to plant those seeds, or you are engaging in the process of growing as a disciple. That's your choice. If you are in as a disciple, you no longer have a choice about whether you're going to grow. That's a given. And if you're not willing to do that, then you didn't count the cost. You need to back up, take your seeds, and figure out where you need to be. And if you still have questions, even if you've been here years and years, you've been in church for years and years, and you're like, you know, that kind of describes me. You know, I believe in God, but I've never really been pressed to decide how I feel about Jesus and whether I'm willing to surrender my life to what he thinks is best for living out the kingdom. That's okay. Nobody's going to judge you. I'm certainly not going to judge you. I would much rather have somebody who's been in the church for 100 years. Oh, Cecil's not here, is he? But you can tell him that I'm referencing. I would rather have somebody who's been in the church for 100 years honestly say, you know what, I'm not sure. I need to back up and reevaluate where I'm at. I would rather have you do that than just assume, hey, I'm here, I've been here, this is how I've been for 50 years, I'm comfortable. Okay, just so that you know, you've been warned, Jesus has said, any branch in me that is not bearing fruit is going to be tossed into the fire. It's not me saying it, it's Jesus saying it. So you can't say you haven't been warned. Where are you at in the journey of following after Jesus? Father, we thank you.